Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hello, Guilty Feminist. Tonight, Monday, the 25th of October, we have a show at King's Place. It's a doubleheader. The first episode is an emergency special for the NHS, including Francesca Martinez making her debut on The Guilty Feminist, Jen Brister, and some incredible advocates and doctors from the NHS itself telling us how it is being sold off. The second half is a Guilty Feminist comedy classic where we are revisiting some of the topics we did in the first year, which is based on a suggestion by one of you, the listeners. It will be with Jen Brister and the fabulous Katie Wicks. Come along to that. There are still a few tickets left. If you can't be there in person, you can buy a live stream ticket, which you can watch for 48 hours. On Thursday, the 4th of November, we're doing a special Guilty Feminist with Grace Petrie. It's going to be like Later with Jules Holland, except it's going to be Later with Grace and me, where I'll be asking her what inspired her to write the songs on her latest album. And in between, she's going to play them for us. Do not miss that. It's going to be a really wonderful night. You can get tickets for both from kingsplace.co.uk. On the Tuesday, the 9th of November, there will be a Guilty Feminist at Soho Theatre. Keep an eye out for the lineup. And I'm doing a stand-up comedy show called The Guilty Feminist Stands Up, which will have some of the classic material, but mostly be brand new and stuff that I don't really want to put on the podcast because I don't want it to be on the internet. So come along. The themes are coming out and going in. It will be from the 30th of November to the 4th of December, live every night at Soho Theatre in London. I hope to be touring it elsewhere, but so far we only have London dates. But the Australia and New Zealand Guilty Feminist Tour is back on. I will be there from the 13th to the 27th of July with a range of exciting co-hosts and guests. Please check the website to see when we are coming to you in Sydney, Melbourne, Canberra, Brisbane, Adelaide, Wellington, Auckland and Christchurch. I hope I haven't left anyone off there. Also, you can join our Patreon if you would like ad-free episodes and also other special content. All these links are in the show notes or go to guiltyfeminist.com. And now on with the show. I'm a feminist, but when I first got excited to do this episode on the Greenham Common Women's Peace Camp, I thought to myself, I'd have been there. Yeah, I'd have been there. I'd have been one of them. And then I read about it and realised the camp was active for 19 years. And I thought, what was I doing in 2002? And I realised, that's just 19 years ago, I realised I was watching Ally McBeal and Facebook hadn't been invented, so I don't really honestly remember what I was doing. And I was like, oh, yeah, no, these women are better than me and always will be.
I'm a feminist, but recently I crashed my car and the first thing I did was ring my dad and say, I'm a small girl, fix this.
Did you use those exact words?
No, but I did sort of go, can you do something to make this not happen?
Did he?
No, I went, babe, there's nothing I can do, you're in Bristol. Which was true. Which was true.
Did you rise to the occasion in a feminist fashion?
Yeah.
Did you call your wife?
No, she couldn't help me in that scenario.
This is where you need a husband.
This is when you need a husband. Yeah. Can I borrow Tom occasionally?
Listen, you can absolutely borrow Tom. I don't know how useful he is in car situations, I'll be honest with you. I could also use a husband, in addition to Tom, an excellent husband, don't get me wrong, but a car husband / a DIY husband.
Oh, my dad's like a bloke like that.
But he's just like, babe, you're in Bristol, there's nothing I can do.
I'm in Portsmouth, you're in Bristol, you're going to have to ring someone there.
Yeah, that was his response.
Which I could see where he was coming from.
Okay, listeners, male listeners around the country, / women who are good with cars and things like this, DIY, if you are willing to be a local husband for any of our tours, where we can just plug in.
Great.
Yeah, like a comedy husband, a comedy feminist husband.
Yes.
So if you're in Bristol, this is the number that you text and say, Barry, you're my Bristol husband.
Yes.
This is an example.
I've smashed up the car.
Exactly. A Manchester husband, all the shelves have fallen out of the tour van. I don't know.
What do you think my tour is like?
The shelves have fallen out of the tour van.
The tour van. Yeah, I don't know why your tour van has shelves, but
I had a tour van. I'm fucking over the moon. My career's going better than I thought.
The train's broken down. Can you come and pick me up and run me to here or drive the train, fix the train?
I mean, this would all be very useful.
Okay, so the tour...
There's no sex there, that has to be very clear.
Oh, no, I don't think that was on the table for
anyone. No, I didn't think it was, but we're just throwing the word husband around.
Barry in Bristol, if you're listening, Dave in Dorset, if you are listening, there is no sex on the table.
Yep. Or the chair, or the bed,
or the tour van, or the train.
I've not got yet, so that's good.
Or the train. No, none of the locations have sex in them.
But if you could occasionally come and help me...
Just be a husband.
Yeah, great.
Yeah. I think when he heard husband, he knew he wasn't getting much sex.
Maybe. I've never had one.
I'm not saying marriage always kills sex, but I'm saying it doesn't help.
No.
It's not the biggest helper in this.
It certainly puts on life support and then occasionally
an aphrodisiac. The word husband or wife is not an aphrodisiac.
No.
I'm a feminist, but having thought, I couldn't possibly have been a Greenham Common woman, I read further and it said that sometimes they dressed up as witches, were known for dressing up as witches.
Yes, please.
And sometimes teddy bears. And I thought, I'm back in. I'd have fit right in. The full compliment I would definitely have got. I would have had a really elegant witch costume. And occasionally, like some days, a cutesy teddy bear situation. I thought, right, I'm back in. All over Instagram on that. But then I read further and it said people used to come and physically attack them, which is like trolling before Twitter was invented, but in person. That's a 3D troll situation where people used to come and literally attack them. And then... worse, local pubs wouldn't serve Greenham Common women. So you'd have a long day's protesting, and then you've got to camp overnight. So you obviously need a little white wine spritzer, don't you, with that situation. You pop down to the local pub. I mean, I don't know how they knew who they were. Probably they're dressed as witches and teddies.
Yeah.
Probably gave them away. But then I was like, oh, hell. When I read more about it, I was like, oh, shit. No, absolutely. I was right back to Green and Common women are better than us and always will be.
I'm a feminist, but my wife looks after all of my finances because I literally can't be trusted with my own money.
Yeah, that's not great.
No, but I am giving money to a woman. So that's quite feminist, isn't it?
Is it?
It's quite punk.
I mean, yes. I see what you mean.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm no better. In fact, I'm worse because I'm in a similar situation, but the holder of the keys of the kingdom is a man.
Ooh.
Again, yeah, I know. Again, Tom Zinsky. But I just don't care enough. I'm just like, this account, and you have to put it from here to
here. I'm so bad at all that stuff.
Well,
when Alice, my partner and I first met, I had so many credit cards, but all of them had like 400 quid on it. It wasn't like I'd racked up loads of money. It was just someone had been like, would you like a credit card? And I'd been like, all right. And then she had to be like, this is a terrible idea. What are you doing? And I was like, well, I don't know. I'm 31. I really should have this shit handled. But I didn't.
Well, it's good that you met her.
Thank fuck. In so many ways.
I think it's good. But one of the things about marriage is, I think it exacerbates your best and worst qualities because the one that's good with money just goes, let me do it. And then the one that's not good with money goes, oh, I never have to do this again. So just give us a cheer if you're married.
Just the three of us.
Only one person's happy enough about it to cheer. Just give us a groan if you're married. Okay, people were happier to do that. Give us a sort of gentle yay if you're married. Just a yay, I am. I won't comment on it. Yeah. They're not enthusiastic, are they?
No.
Give us a cheer if you're not married. They're much happier.
Someone is literally like fist punching the air. Yeah. Like that is just for the listener at home.
Okay, so if you're not married, I'm going to say further, if you're not in a long-term relationship, I'll tell you what happens is that you just relinquish responsibility for things you don't like, because why would you bother when they're there,
yes,
right? Now, what happens is 10 years in, you now are physically incapable of doing those things. You don't know. The world has moved on. You checkbooks don't exist anymore. And you've got no idea how they work. How does anything work anymore?
It's all on the phones.
It's all on the phones now. I'm not interested in that. But there are things that I'm good at that Tom isn't, that he hasn't done for 10 years either. Like, I don't know.
The guilty feminist.
So I'm much better socially. He mostly has a social life because of me. So things like that. So he thinks, why would I bother? Why would I bother? Because you're going to make it happen for me. And so you become codependent because you realise after a while you are half a person. You are an excellent half. You are a really excellent half of... this is not a good advertisement for marriage or feminism.
No, I'd say no.
I'm not saying I'm half a person. I'm a whole person with some very excellently sharpened skills and some absolutely appalling skills. That's all I'm saying. I'm a feminist, but I also read today on the Greenham Common Front that between 1989 and 1991, all the missiles, and in case anyone's going, what is Greenham Common? You've not really explained it. It was a military base. Women surrounded the military base, and in tens of thousands at times, to protest because they did not want nuclear weapons there, quite understandably. They got rid of those nuclear weapons between 1989 and 1991. So this protest worked. The peace camp remained as a continuing protest against the concept of nuclear weapons for another 9 years. They won and they stayed there for another 9 years just protesting against the concept of nuclear weapons. And that's when I thought, oh, they really are better than me, because I would have had a very long lunch. I would just be like, look, we won, guys, we won. But then today I met Rebecca Johnson, this incredible woman who is going to be our guest. I said this to her and I went, that's amazing that you stayed there for 9 years after you'd won. And she went, some people didn't know when to go. And I was like, yes, I'm back in the game. I'm back in the game. You know what? It's never different. You always think people of the past were so much... there was just, everything was wonderful and it was just shoulder to shoulder, arm to arm. Of course, there was contentions, there was jealousies, there was succession-like rivalries. I can't wait to hear about it because human beings are human beings. I'm so excited.
Oh, me too. I think it's because some people aren't sure when to leave the party.
That is
and
correct.
I am that person.
Would you have been hanging around nine years after?
Well, just in case something happened. Imagine if something massive... The reason that I'm worried about leaving parties... I remember staying very late to a party at your house once because I thought, well, something might happen. She's friends with Emma Thompson. I don't want her to rock up and me to have missed that. So,
oh, I see.
Just in case something happens. So what about if I left and then 10 minutes later they were like, oh, yeah, everyone turned up and you just missed it.
Oh, I see. And that's why you were there at 4 a.m. and I was going, oh...
Please leave.
I was going, oh, shall I pop the kettle on? Start making breakfast sandwiches?
I wasn't there that late.
I'm kidding. No, I love that. I love people who don't leave the party. If my party goes on really late, I think it's a real success. If people won't go, sometimes I've had like a lunchtime barbecue and people have been there at 2 a.m. and I'm like, yes, I am amazing at parties. So I need people who fear leaving in case something good happens. very much, so I feel like it was a good party. So
we're going to be out really late tonight, aren't we?
Yeah, that's what's going to happen. Live from the Courthouse Hotel, Shoreditch, the Spontaneity Shop presents the Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Francis White, guest co-host Susie Ruffle, and our very special guest, Rebecca Johnson, talking about Mothers of the Revolution! This is The Guilty Feminist, the podcast in which we explore our noble goals as 21st century feminists and our hypocrisies and insecurities which undermine them. I'm Deborah Francis White, with me is Susie Ruffle, and we are talking about the Greenham Common Women and the new documentary everyone must see, Mothers of the Revolution! Hello, hello. Welcome, welcome, welcome. And thank you so much for coming to the show. And thank you, Susie, for being here.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It's an absolute delight. So thank you so much for coming out. Just give us a cheer if you know anything about Greenham Common. Just give us a cheer if this is all new to you. Great. Okay, so this is great for the people who've made the documentary because they're not just preaching to the choir. They're making their choir bigger. When you leave here, if you've enjoyed the documentary, go on socials and tell people, and tell real people with your actual face as well. That's always good. It doesn't always have to be online. I am expecting, I don't know if this is, should I be expecting to need a hanky? I feel it might be tissue worthy. Do you know much about Greenham Common, Susie?
Bits and bobs. Most of which, when you said to me, do you want to do the thing about Greenham Common? And I thought, I better fucking learn something. and so I don't know if you've heard of Wikipedia. I had a quick look at that.
Did you go to the University of Wikipedia?
I did, yeah. My mum and dad are very proud. But I knew a little bit, but I'm really excited to learn more and to chat to Rebecca afterwards.
Yes, me too. All right. Are we ready for some stand-up comedy? Yeah. Then please welcome to the stage the incredible Susie Ruffle.
And this is what I just... I'm literally just standing, so I'll just do that. I'm just going to tell you a very quick story. Deb's asked if I had anything that was sort of about me standing up for myself, which I do a little bit. So just I'll just try and make you laugh briefly in this slightly weird scenario where we're all in a cinema and you're thinking, is she allowed to do this? Well, we're not sure if I am, but let's just crack on. So I'm going to talk to you about school. I had a terrible time at school. I really hated school. I'm not very academic at all, and none of the teachers liked me. I distinctly remember one teacher saying to me, Miss Ruffle, I don't think you'll have a career out of just chatting. Well, I think you'll find I have. But he was horrible, right? He was really, really horrible. And I'm severely dyslexic, and I just had a terrible, terrible time. Like I tell you how dyslexic I am. When I drive into Wales, their signs make more sense to me. That is the level of dyslexia I have. Just like, I'll get some petrol. Lovely. So it's got weird. So there was a teacher at school, and he was horrible to me, and he would always make me read aloud from the text, but because I was dyslexic, I'd make a mistake, I'd feel very silly, he'd get to feel very, very clever. And so on one occasion, I'm reading aloud from this textbook, and I misread a word, right? I misread the word organism, okay? You're a clever bunch. Yeah, a lot of you have got it. A couple of dyslexics, not a clue. I said orgasm in front of 33 15-year-olds. You can imagine what happens next. The class go wild, people are laughing, people are clapping. A boy at the back was slapping his thigh like he was in panto. I was thinking, bloody hell, this feels good. Is this a job? Now, Mr. Crossan didn't like me getting a big laugh, and looking back, I find this very shocking. I was a very dyslexic child from a very working-class background. He dragged me out in front of the whole of the class, and he said to me, Susie Ruffle, you mark my words, you will never amount to anything. Okay, first heckle. How on a deal with it? Think on your feet, Ruffle, think on your feet. Quick as a flash, I said, I'll amount to more than you, wanker. Huge laugh, okay? People can't believe it's happening. I'm high-fiving my way out of the classroom, right? The headmistress comes to get me. She takes me to her office, and then she rings home. She says, one of your parents is going to have to come up to get you. And I think, please, can Mum answer the phone? She can see no wrong in me. That's how this has happened. But Dad, I'm like my dad. Dad can see all the wrong in me. I've got like a real geezer dad. I've got a proper geezer dad. My dad's the kind of bloke that can only write in capital letters. He's one of those. It means no matter what he writes, it looks aggressive. You know, it's like, happy birthday, love Dad! You know, in crayon. That's who Dad is, right? And he came up the school driving a pickup truck, wearing a sheepskin. It was mid-July, but he'd found his look. And in he goes into the teacher's office, and she tells him the story, and my dad goes mad. Suze, you're spang out of order, you can't be swearing at your teachers. I said, Dad, please let me explain. He said, no, Suze,
I don't care what the explanation is. You've embarrassed yourself today. And do you know what? You've embarrassed me. I said, Dad, come on, let me explain. He said, go on, then try and get yourself out of this. I said, well, Mr. Crossan doesn't like me. And he makes read aloud for the textbook to make a fool of me. And I misread a word. That's all. I misread one word. And everybody laughed. And then he dragged me out in front of the whole of the class. And he told me I would never amount to anything. So I called him a wanker. And Dad took this in and then looked at the headmistress and went, that does sound like a type of thing a wanker would do. We'll leave it there.
Well, Susie, that story to me says right from childhood, we know that we can stand up to power if we see that power is being unfair and unjust. And so there is a little mother of the revolution in you right there in the classroom. I am now very excited to introduce this documentary. Mothers of the Revolution is a new documentary which tells the story of the Greenham Common Women's Peace Camp. It was directed by Brian March and features interviews with key participants, including Julie Christie and Rebecca Johnson, alongside archive footage. It's available for download now. Enjoy. Our guest today lived at the Greenham Common Peace Camp for 5 years. She is the director and founder of the Acronym Institute for Disarmament Diplomacy, as well as a co-founding strategist and organiser of the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, and part of this movement that won a Nobel Peace Prize. Please welcome Rebecca Johnson! Rebecca, you got a standing ovation there by a lot of people who are grateful not to have died in a nuclear holocaust. I mean, the people at home haven't listened, so I'm trying to do it in a way that doesn't give spoilers, but it's a documentary, so I think it's probably all right to say there was no nuclear war. That's probably all right. So if you're listening at home, we've just seen this absolutely remarkable documentary about a movement that started at a kitchen table in Wales, gathered momentum, lots and lots of women who walked to Greenham, then chained themselves in the 80s to rails, actually broke into this camp where nuclear missiles were being held, making Britain a target. But also this movement of women grew and became a global movement of women saying, we don't want this for our future, we don't want this for our children. And then that grew into a movement of civilians, men too. And what was the most remarkable thing for me was Gorbachev saying, who, if you're very young and you don't know, Gorbachev and Reagan ended the Cold War. And when Gorbachev was asked, why did he trust Reagan? He said, I didn't. And he said, I trusted the Green and Common women to hold Reagan to account. And if I disarmed, not allow him to arm. And that must have been, that was so emotional to watch, but that must have been so emotional to hear.
Yeah, it really was. And I actually want to say that what he said was, and I only have it from the interpretation because Russian isn't one of my languages, but what he said was, he basically knew that we would not give up. We, the Greenham Common women, were not going to give up. At Greenham, I mean, that's how I heard it, that we would not leave Greenham until the US missiles were going. So then it was possible to negotiate with Reagan.
It's and that, so interesting that the people have to hold their leaders to account. Yeah. It really makes a difference. Because had that arms race continued and continued, we could all not be here. We could have, you know, someone could have pressed the button. And so what you did, when you went down and you probably thought, well, who are we to stand up to these people? And this might look a bit hopeless, but you gathered such momentum that you actually forced their hands. And that I find absolutely extraordinary.
Yeah. And women were, of course, doing this also in the US. I mean, our court case in November of 1983, from that, quite a lot of women started to fan out across the US and make the connections. And remember, there was a peace movement. You saw Seneca, the base in upstate New York. A lot of Greenham women went to Seneca, and frankly, a lot of American women went to Greenham. And one of the women who took part in the air traffic control action that you saw kind of dramatized.
Was a little bit, if you're listening at home, there's a little bit of dramatization in this. It's mostly documentary footage, interviews, real footage from the time. But there is some dramatization. But I think it's very, very classily done. And it's very seamless. At first, I didn't realize it was dramatization. And then I thought, okay, this is a bit too good now that they had cameras in all of... Okay, all right.
Because let's face it.
I get it.
We've all got old.
Honestly, I don't know if activism keeps you young, but I thought you all looked remarkably similar to how you looked back in the day. I thought you were all doing very well. Given you slept outside for 10 years, quite honestly, in the elements, you face the elements. Well, I think activism suits you.
I only slept outside for 5 of those years.
Oh, well, what a slacker.
Gauge the weather as whether it was one hot water bottle weather or 2 hot water bottle weathers, you know, or actually quite nice, but that was only summer. And funnily enough, quite a lot of women tended to come down for summer.
Sure.
It's like a really good camp for summer.
Mm. Yeah, fair weather activists. I get it. Listen, I think if I had camped there for one whole summer, I would be telling everyone and I'd be dining out on that. But you also did absolutely extraordinary things. You went to the USSR, right?
Yeah, I went in 85 on a bus that was entirely women, and it was grey-green buses, if any of you remember, anyway, who had 2 women drivers, and we had a couple of women who spoke Russian. And we also did that thing of camping on the steps of the block of flats that Olga lived in, and waiting out the KGB. I think we had 4 KGB, and there were, or maybe we had 3 KGB, and there were 4 of us, I think it was. And they weren't letting us up. And so we stayed and we chatted and we sang some songs and we chatted and we sang some songs. And Olga knew we were there, but we couldn't go up until at least 2 of the KGB had to go to the loo, and they, for some reason, decided they had to go together. And at that point...
Excellent work.
At that point, a couple of us slipped through the door and ran upstairs and met with Olga, had tea, had wonderful cakes that she'd made. And we met with the baby that she had not aborted, the baby that they told her she should abort, that she wouldn't. And I met that amazing young woman, well, she's not even so young now, just at the premiere of this film during the London Film Festival. And it was just a very emotional moment.
And she's
Olga again. I
You met her daughter at the premiere.
And I met her daughter and her son. The little boy in that, we also met him. I mean, he must have been 9 or something like that. Mm-hmm. But also meeting the daughter that she had, despite all this pressure on her from the Soviet authorities.
To terminate the baby. Olga is a woman who was... I would say Rebecca's opposite number in Moscow, because there were, of course, as Sting pointed out, I hope the Russians love their children too. There were certainly lots of Russian people who were wanting an end to this. And Olga was a woman who worked with Greenham Common women, and herself almost went to jail for 3 years and was advised by the government to terminate her pregnancy at that time, because otherwise she'd be separated from the baby. She didn't, and she was given a suspended sentence. Tom, can you just edit this in a little bit earlier, the first time Olga's mentioned? I'll just tap in. Can you just pop that in, just for the people at home? Because, sorry, that's boring to you, you've just seen it. We saw masses of police brutality in Britain, and this age is... you know, has not gone away and is looking to escalate with this new policing bill, which is very, very frightening. Mm-hmm. But we saw proper police brutality and very scary things. But the KGB feels like another level to go and mess with. Were you very scared?
Actually, actually, by that time, at 1985, no, because we already knew that they were talking about us as Greenham heroines. And in fact, I was shown a poster that looked remarkably like it was one of these socialist realist posters, like all of this. But you knew it was me because it had my cape and, you know, my long hair and the suffragette ribbons, you know, and I still do the suffragette ribbon thing. Because we didn't think of ourselves at all as mothers of revolution, and a lot of us, including me, you know, weren't mothers, although I can understand in that context, because the other women whose narrative was used in this film, for them being a mother was a very important part. But I was actually one of the dykes at Greenham, let's be honest. And although I did occasionally, there was this American woman who turned up and started being very disruptive, and you know, we really thought she was probably the CIA, and she was going, "You don't look like a lesbian."
Yeah. Wow. Well, but Chris, who featured heavily, was a lesbian, but only discovered she was a lesbian at
when
Greenham.
She went to Greenham.
Yeah. Yeah, Greenham was a place that I think a lot of women discovered they were more lesbian than they'd previously thought.
Yeah.
And she had three children, so, you know, motherhood.
That was really tough on her.
Yeah, yeah, really. It looked very emotional for her to talk about.
But remember, this was the 1980s. It was such a horrendously, you know, homophobic, gay-bashing time. So many lesbians who were mothers risked losing their children just for the fact, you know, with Clause 28, Section 28, guess who it was that actually abseiled into the House of Lords and chained themselves to Sue Lawley's desk when she was trying to read the...
Was it lesbians?
It was Greenham lesbians.
Was it Greenham lesbians?
Yes, of course it was Greenham lesbians. Who do you expect?
I remember it was
Annie and Boo and Sally and...
I knew it was lesbians. I didn't know it was Greenham lesbians who'd crashed
who
the
Who else
news.
Would it be?
Greenham women are everywhere. And, you know, we were going into the pawn shops too at the same time. I mean, that's the point, that we were making connections. And you saw, and I was so glad in the film that they picked up on the things that I and others had said and went, you know, and interviewed Zoll. And then Titify, who, I mean, I hadn't seen since that period when Zoll brought her over to Greenham to tell us how it was. And she's a Maori woman from Aotearoa, New Zealand, and had worked very much with Pacific women. So really, we were very much about, yes, nuclear weapons, but we were also about the environmental and the humanitarian harm that had been done right through the whole kind of nuclear system, from the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And you see Setsuko, who I worked with in this last decade with the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, ICAN, go figure. Setsuko, who was 13 years old in Hiroshima at school when the bomb hit very close by, one of only two, possibly three girls that managed somehow to crawl free and survived. And I didn't even know she'd come to Greenham until Breyer, the director, sent me a photo and said, is this Setsuko? And I looked at it, I said, it certainly looks like her. And then I emailed it to her and said, Setsuko, is this you? We had a conversation. And yeah, that, you know, so all these things weaving in and out. And, you know, and it was that led me on leaving Greenham to decide that the next step I had to take, because I kind of realised that if you do activism and you do it right, we can get a treaty and we can actually ban. Now, INF Treaty only banned one class of weapon. I mean, it was kind of important because it was a very destabilising, you know, the cruise, the Pershing, the SS-20s, the war fighting, you know, the first use, the ones that would actually start the war in the European theatre, which is, of course, where we live. So I realised this, you could get, you know, if you're really active. And Greenpeace, bless them, gave me a job when I left, because I left after we got the treaty, because 5 years is actually a long time, and I was exhausted. I'd been beaten up just a few times too many, and I just needed to move
who
on.
Who had beaten you up? Was it the... Because we saw in the film both police brutality, but also just random men who turned up in person and threw things and hurt people.
The vigilantes did destroy my first ever bender that I actually made, that the Traveller women had taught us how to make. My first ever bender did get destroyed because it was...
What's a bender?
The bender is those igloo-looking things where you... you ask permission of the trees to bring them into Greenham, to take them from where they're growing, and then you bend them over and you make a kind of igloo and you cover that with plastic and tarpaulin and some nice colourful blankets so, you know, you're cosy. And then the bailiffs come along a few months or weeks later and they tear it all down. And you see me in the middle of my bender being kind of it torn down. I thought it was a good idea just to stay in the bender and try to talk to them about it. But there we go. But the thing is that, yes, so my first bender was burnt.
And by whom, though?
By the vigilantes, yeah, because
so
it was quite close to the road.
So these were just angry men who... Yeah. Misogynists? What was their beef? Like, what were they? Why were they so angry? Because you weren't doing anything to them, even if they disagreed with what you were doing. Yeah. You were peacefully protesting.
Well, a couple of them, they were called RAGE. Ratepayers Against Greenham Encampments. And they used to have these horrible misogynist cartoons, adverts in the Newbury Weekly News. And it turned out that the reason why they had all this blood and offal and garbage and maggots in it was because one of them at least worked in an abattoir. And they probably objected to the fact that a lot of Greenham women were vegans. I mean, you know, hey, this was before veganism was really cool like it is now.
Wow, that's an extraordinary thing. So someone who worked in an abattoir came and got offal and threw it at vegan women who were trying to stop...
It was carloads. They'd come in carloads. Oh, no, they never did those. But it was... Yeah. When I mention about the attack in the middle of the night on a tent that had two women, it was right up by the silos, so it was in the sort of woodland area close to the silos, and it was two women that wanted to be able to kind of watch the silos and let us know what changes and that sort of thing. Hazel and Jane... And it was just an ordinary tent, because by that time we were being evicted so often, like pretty well every day. But tucked in the woods, they weren't being evicted quite as often, but they couldn't stay there long enough to have a bender. But it was just an ordinary little tent and two men in the middle of the night, and the women were inside, so they didn't see them. But it sounded like... I can't remember exactly the... But they thought it was American soldiers, and it was... You know, the vigilantes really tended to chuck things from the road, but they did chuck one summer, July, they threw a firebomb right next to an area that we called the clearing, which was actually considered a safe place that women who had kids could put up their tents and camp, because there was no access directly onto the big, you know, onto the main road.
So if you wanted to say, I am not frontline in this action because I have children, there was a safe
place
where
you
could... And someone threw a firebomb there.
Yes, in July, and the gorse and the everything went up like tinder. And so 2 weeks later was Hiroshima Day and then Nagasaki Day. So, and we went to the clearing and then we just kind of picked up all this ash and we just rubbed it into... our arms and legs and face, and then went up to the main gate of the base and started sort of singing. You know, I sang of my nightmare and we sang various different songs. And, you know, that was kind of our way to respond after being attacked, was to use what they were trying, the violence that they tried to use against us, to use it in ways that would channel people into thinking about the immense apocalyptic extinction violence of nuclear weapons, whether they were inside the base or they were outside the base. That was always what we were trying to do. That's why we stopped the convoy, because we were basically stopping it and trying to look straight in the eyes of the drivers and saying, you know, what you're driving is megadeth. Mm. Are you going to drive over me in order to carry on that? Because if you can't, then you probably should not be driving nuclear weapons around.
At all. Mm.
Trying to connect them in with that
their
which
humanity.
Is human in them, inside them.
Activate their humanity.
And they usually stopped. Nearly always they did actually stop, which is why we were able then to paint them and show that we'd marked them.
Mm. Were you frightened every day? Like, I was just thinking, living there for 5 years, like, constantly putting your body into that sort of like fight or flight mode must have just been exhausting.
You can't do that. That's the thing. I had nightmares before I went to Greenham. When I went to Greenham and I started, you know, the sentry box was my first action, and we took it exactly a year after the camp left Cardiff.
And just for the listeners at home, this was an incident depicted in the documentary where you broke into the sentry box and then the police were all around trying to get in and they couldn't.
Yeah, and it was quite hilarious.
Yeah, it really was.
And that was actually one of the first ever actions, and certainly the first action that led to women going to prison. And then that was the group of women that formed the basis of the group that went to the US mm-hmm. and did the court case.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
When you walked into this building today, now this is a hotel, we just needed a screening room that was sizable so we could fit a guilty feminist audience in here, but it's actually called the Shoreditch Courthouse Hotel, which I hadn't thought anything of. I just thought, well, that's where the people who've made the documentary have booked it, we'll come along and do it. But you came in like with a look on your face and going, I can't believe this event is here. This has brought back a memory. Tell the audience what memory this brought back for you.
I was sent to Holloway from this magistrate's court. Normally it was from Newbury, but sometimes when we would say that we were not going to, that when they gave us a fine for occupation or, whatever it was, they started off doing us under a 600-year-old law called breach of the peace. And that's for like dancing on the silos and the sentry box with that. But then when we were blocking the roads and then painting convoys and things like that, it turned into something that they called criminal damage. And they then fine us. And a lot of us refused to pay the fines. Some women needed to pay the fines and we'd raise the money because they had kids or they had jobs and, you know, and so on. But I refused to pay the fine, and then 28 days would pass. And then usually they'd come to Greenham to pick me up. But on this particular occasion, I was speaking, I think Hackney Greenham Group had invited me to speak at some meeting in Hackney and had publicised it. And so when I turned up to do this meeting, the police turned up to arrest me because a warrant was out. And this is where I was brought. And unfortunately, it was just before Christmas, so he sent me down, I think, for 21 days. But, you know, and I said, can you please just send me down for 14 days and then I'm out before Christmas? But no, it was 21 days, so even with remission.
So you had Christmas in
Holloway. Inside, yeah. But the wonderful thing was that I could actually connect with some of the other Greenham women who were also spending Christmas inside. And
oh,
that was
what
actually
a wonderful thing.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
That's the most wonderful time of the year, isn't it? No matter where you are.
The most wonderful time. Oh, you're here. Oh, great. Well, this will be more cheerful. What was it like when you went to Holloway? Were prisoners who were not in for criminal damage against a nuclear base, were they sympathetic to the cause? Were you seen as quite heroic there? Did they know about it? Was that a place where you were able to spread the word?
My first prison sentence actually was the one that I was most scared of, because the Welsh women that I'd been arrested with, they got all sent to an open prison and I didn't. And then I was put in a cell and then I heard the door open and then, you know, the keys all jangle and then the door opens and I could hear that somebody was brought in, and I sort of turned, and when she saw my face, she said, "Oh, you poor love, it's your first time, isn't it?" And that was when I realised just how amazing some of the women in prison are, and also how political are the reasons that they were in, whether it's that they had been prostituted, that they had been, they were finally taken to court because they had said no to police who wanted freebies out on the Streatham High Road or wherever, Kingsland High Road.
So there were sex workers... And the police had said, basically, I'm not going to pay, yeah, otherwise I'm going to arrest you.
Obviously, poverty played a massive role. And so, you know, some women were then ended up doing drugs, you know, drug mules. There were addiction things. But, you know, with very, very few exceptions, you know, women looked after each other in the prisons. And I think that's really important to say. So I came out of that first sentence saying, I'm not actually going to declare myself a political prisoner in the way the suffragettes did. See, the suffragettes were the mother of my revolution, and you know, and as you can see, I love the ending of that film, didn't you? Mm. All those amazing women, you know, because they are the daughters of Greenham, whether they know it or not. You know, if we did something, it was to give courage, and courage calls to courage. So this was the right way to end the film, is actually showing the next generation of women that are still going to have to carry on the struggle, and linking the environmental struggle, the struggle against nuclear war, because we still have far too many nuclear weapons. I mean, there were 50,000 back in the 80s, and there's 13,000. So Greenham was the beginning of the end of the arms race, the nuclear arms race between the US and the Soviet Union. But we've had to be working ever since then. We've banned nuclear testing. And finally, in 2017, we got what I'm most proud of in my life, which is the UN Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. And it was negotiated. And the chair of the negotiations was a woman, a Costa Rican ambassador, Elaine White Gomez, who was just awesome. She brought the treaty home. And I probably don't have time to read a couple of bits of the treaty, but this is such a feminist as well as humanitarian treaty. Its preamble frames it in terms both of, you know, all the impacts, you know, not just nuclear war, but all the kind of environmental, developmental, economic impacts which disproportionately affect women and girls, including, of course, through radiation. And then elsewhere talks about the agency of women, the necessity to have equal numbers of women around the table negotiating everything to do with peace and environment and disarmament and so on. And then it has two obligations in it that require that the nations that sign up to this, which are called states parties, have to follow through on persuading others, like the ones like Britain that have the nuclear weapons, and to assist the survivors, you know, the hibakusha from both Japan and from nuclear testing, those affected, and remediate the environments that have been destroyed by nuclear activities. That's part of a UN treaty, and it entered into international legal force at the beginning of this year, 22nd of January, 2021,
wow.
It's law. But we have to sign this country up to it, because it's only law on this country if we get them to sign.
Oh, well, I'm sure with this government.
Well, they may not get a choice on this one, because loads and loads of cities, you know, Manchester, Leeds, Glasgow, Edinburgh, even my city that I live in, Brighton and Hove, you know, they're signed up, promising that they will do everything they possibly, that they align themselves with the treaty, they support the treaty, and they will try to implement it. So all of these pressures are coming up, and also more and more banks are coming up, you know, and investment, they're all coming up from enormous pressures that they cannot make profits out of nuclear weapons. They have to disinvest. And the same thing's being done, of course, on climate, you know, fossil fuels and stuff. These are totally interconnected. And
actions.
Obviously, as you saw people like Rose McGowan at the end of the film, the violence against women, that still continues. We've still got a job to do. And I want all of you not just to carry Greenham home, but to carry that courage to act now to stop nuclear war, because it is still, you know, by... you know, human or computer error now, of course, really is a very big danger, miscalculation, all that kind of thing, to really stop all this climate destruction, but also to make sure that we do support all the women who have been affected by violence against women and girls, and that we stop them. And you guys in the audience here, you've got to talk to the other guys. You've got to change it with them, because we can't change it all by ourselves. And it's no good the police saying that we have to somehow be careful how we walk home. We've got all to recognise these interconnect, and we've got to stop them all.
Rebecca, I want to ask you, you know, there are lots of young activists and socially activated people in the audience. What advice do you have for us? Because right now, with there's so many dangerous bills coming through. Priti Patel is just having an absolute field day. You know, the borders bill, the policing bill, which is really terrifying. But also we're doing an emergency episode of The Guilty Feminist on Monday night because there's a new bill about the NHS, which is just basically selling it off. There's so many terrifying bills coming through, and they've got such a huge majority. They can just sort of, seems like they can do what they like. And we've got a campaign that we've been making videos for and getting people to write blogs about. And we're now teaming up with some other people to get a protest in the street going against we're not going to kill the bill, the policing bill, because there's such a big majority, but we want them to change at least the clause that says protesters can be arrested for being noisy and annoying, because that is totally subjective. And also the point of a protest is you're noisy and annoying. That's what a protest is. So, like, can you give us some advice on how we can team together to reach our goals? What advice would you give to activists now?
You know, I wouldn't dare to give advice now, because you've got so many different kind of tools. You know, all this social media, but we also know there's backlashes inside that. But just remind you of the image of the web. Why did we choose that? Well, spiders are really indomitable. You think you've got rid of spiders and the web's come back. That's us. That's women. Mm. But also, every single strand of that is really fragile. That's actually how we felt going down to Greenham. I mean, you know, I didn't know anything. You know, I just felt I had to do something. But in our fragility, we connect with each other. And in connecting with each other, we become stronger and stronger and stronger. And look how the web kept growing. And so really all I can say is do something. Believe in yourself. Tell the truth. Not just in your own voice, but amplify the voice of all the other women and all the non-violent activists that are trying to resist. And remember, what we did at Greenham was we changed the nature of non-violence as well. We talked about feminist non-violence, because a lot of women went to Greenham not only because they wanted to find lots of other women, because they kind of, you know, wanted to find themselves sexually, and it was a lot of fun there for a while. I should at this point mention
should
that.
Should we set up an anti-policing bill camp that's also a bit of a sex fest? Is that what you're recommending, Rebecca?
Fine, I'll take
not
the
exactly,
wife.
Although it doesn't have. I mean, I met Hina, a Blue Gate woman, but we met outside Aldermaston. Actually, I think it was Burfield, the nuclear bomb factory, because Britain carries on making nuclear bombs.
Yeah, I mean, that's a make
and,
cute, isn't
and
it?
We are still protesting because... Now, if I'm the mother of anything, I'm the mother of the Aldermaston Women's Peace Camp, because three of us needed a bit of a break from Greenham. So off we went to Aldermaston, which is only 6 miles away, and we camped over a weekend, because you don't want to camp long-term at Aldermaston, because they do all the plutonium stuff for Britain's warheads, and so they're actually pretty contaminated. But, you know, weekend... And that weekend
puts that dodgy
became
Airbnb
a weekend
in last
every,
weekend's perspective.
That weekend became a weekend every month and carried on right up until lockdown, and it's been restarted again. So when I was up at Faz Lane doing... did you watch Vigil and, you know, those things?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I was up at Faz Lane and I rented a little place because I thought, I'm not doing the peace camp again. So, you know, and I... You know, I'm a bit older and, you know, I had enough money to rent up there. So I rented, but we did at Faz Lane 365, where we got people from lots and lots of communities to come for 1 or 2 days. You see, that's the point. You don't need to again have you know, loads of women coming and committing to loads of time. You need to be creative about the kind of actions. Well, while I was being very active up at Faz Lane, remember, this was after the Iraq war, and I had just given up hope. I was doing a lot of work with the UN and stuff like that, and I had just given up hope of that kind of a system. So I went back into activism, and I got this lovely invitation from the women of the Aldermaston Women's Peace Camp saying, you know, dear Rebecca, as one of our mothers, will you come down, because we're about to be evicted because they've changed the law around protest at Aldermaston. And we're going to have a cocktail party. Bring your best frock. So I thought, well, I got to do that.
Yeah.
So I did. And I had to borrow a car from a neighbour in Hackney and all of this. And then I met Hina, who was wearing a very nice tux. And, you know, that was nearly 15 years ago. So, you know, that's you can also find lots of love in protest. You know, whatever's the direction that you want to be looking for, you know, there's nothing like being kind of chained next to somebody or being represented in court by somebody. You know, this sort of thing.
Oh, it's what people did before
commit
Hinge, clearly.
To do something. Well, we didn't, you know, Greenham, we didn't have TV and radio. We didn't have social media. We actually had to do it in life. And, you know, out of that, Aldermaston actually took the case to the High Court on the protest, just like we kept doing again and again with Greenham. I think there's probably still an injunction out on me that I'm not supposed to go back to Greenham. And I think that was taken out in 1983, and I've still been going back to Greenham whenever I want. So, you know,
are we safe to put that on the podcast?
Don't be afraid, because the more of you that do it, and then if they do arrest and try and make an example of a few of the people that you protested against this protest bill. Don't let them treat us as terrorists. Don't let them turn our non-violent, active, disruptive, yes, but non-violent, never harming people, only going after trying to stop the harm that military, industrial, high investment, you know, the worst kind of pharmaceutical gaslighting, you know, we have to disrupt those.
Mm.
And that is not terrorism.
No. Well, you
got
that
is staying alive.
You got the Nobel Peace Prize, not Michael Haseltine.
Well, that's true too. And it was a collective one. And do you know who we chose to be the two that we went up? Setsiko. Setsiko was our choice to accept the Nobel Peace Prize on our behalf. And then we chose one of our young women, young staff members, because we wanted to actually show that, you know, stopping nuclear weapons can be really cool. Saving the world is really fun, isn't it? And so those were the two. But we insisted that the Nobel Peace Committee had to make us 13 of the medals. Not all of them are solid gold, I have to say, because that one, you know. So
I've got, you've got one.
Yeah, I've got one. But it's collective.
So casual.
I'm under the, you know, it's in my living room, but I take it all around, you know, all kinds of protests. And there's what, you know, there's a medal in Africa. There's a couple of medals in the Pacific and Japan. There's medals in, you know, Latin America, North America. There's medals, I think, that go around all of the nuclear armed countries. There's enough in Europe to go around all, you know, I mean, you have to travel around, but, you know, there's enough that go around the NATO countries and also, you know, Russia. We've still got to actually deal with this kind of thing.
Mm.
So we're not heroines. We neither, you know, have we sacrificed. We tried to stay alive. And many women did also try to stay alive for their children or so that they'd be able to have children.
Mm.
That wasn't my narrative, but it was an important narrative.
Mm.
And
yeah,
yeah.
Well, also, the mothers of the revolution to me implied you gave birth to this revolution.
Yeah.
We need to take some questions from the audience.
Yes,
we don't have long left. So does anyone in the audience have a question for Rebecca?
Hi, my name's Kat. I'm a secondary school teacher. So I just wondered if you had any advice for those of us who work in education about how we can encourage our young people to kind of go on the path, the journey that you did?
Well, I don't think you're wanting all your young people to go on quite the same journey as I did, because if it hadn't been for Greenpeace kind of offering me a job and then my turning that job into working with the UN and stuff like that, and but never employed by the UN. They kept trying to offer me jobs and I couldn't actually explain that I had a long criminal record. So don't suggest that they do that. But let me tell you something. The UN actually has policy that passed through the UN Security Council and is attached to various treaties, and you'll see it in this treaty too, about the importance of peace and disarmament education around the world. So this is a government obligation on this government, by the way. And there's some lovely people. I have a lovely friend in New York who has actually developed a number of kind of peace education modules that the UN is able to use. And so we could, you know, develop some of that for up to date here. But let's face it, look at the climate activists. Look at the kids coming out of school for Fridays for Future. Mm. They actually get it. They know it. It's not a competition between whether you're a climate activist or you're an anti-nuclear activist or you're an activist against violence against women, because actually you need to be all of those things. Mm-hmm. We need to inform each other so that we are doing all of those things together. But that's really what needs to happen. And I mean, I would happily come to schools, and actually my neighbour in the flat that I'm living in, you know, she's on the third floor, I'm on the sixth floor. She, a year ago, so she would have been 12 then, 11 or 12. Anyway, she, because she'd known about me and I talked to her about the suffragettes and I'd given her a bunch of suffragette ribbons and things like that for a different project she did when she was about 10. And she came back to me and interviewed me. She is the greatest interviewer. She was so good. She interviewed me about Greenham for a project. So, you know, something like that can happen. And if you want to do anything like that, you know, I'm only down in Brighton. I'll come on a train and I'll talk.
Where's your school?
It's in Camberwell.
It's in Camberwell.
Camberwell. Well, there you go. That's not hard to get to. You know, but I do.
You've done well, Kat, there, haven't you? get her email. Seriously, you'll be a hero.
And there's quite a lot of us because, you know, Greenham women really are everywhere.
My mother-in-law is actually a Greenham Common woman. So Tom, who's running Mike's now, he is
the... What's her name?
He's a Mary Zielinski. So she had kids at home. She had day player. But Tom said, oh, no, she used to camp overnight, come home, and where's mum? She's at Greenham Common. And but you wouldn't... I wouldn't say that was her... You know, she did work for Amnesty and the Medical Foundation. She's never told me she was at Greenham Common. Tom was like, no, my mum was at Greenham Common a lot. So I think so many women did it. Like, you saw that when, you know, you had that... what was it called? What was the brilliant slogan that you had? Embrace the base, where you are... And you didn't have social media, so you had no idea how many people were coming. It was just six women, phone six women, can you phone another six women? You had no idea. And you seeing... Was it Chris... in tears, remembering
that she came down on that day. Yeah.
Yes, and people and sort of crying about that. You woke up, and suddenly the base was surrounded by all of these women with candles, and they were perfectly silent because they didn't want to wake up the people that were asleep, the women that were sleeping there. And you said, "That's women for you. They were so considerate." But that was when you knew you would get your 16,000. But in fact, you got more like 30,000.
More than double, 35,000.
35,000.
ITN News, which they didn't use on this, but ITN News had me actually saying 35,000. I don't know where the 30,000 came from. Probably the police. But, you know,
they were lowballing
it. 70,000.
The police were lowballing it. But also, Kat, can I say, and any other teachers that are listening to this, this documentary, show your kids this documentary.
Yeah. Actually, Nina Nana, if any of you saw at the launch, when it was being launched at the London Film Festival, Nina Nana did a brilliant piece on ITN News. And afterwards, she turned to me and she said, this should be in every school.
Mm. That's what you were saying, Susie, weren't you?
I was saying how embarrassed I was that I didn't know, that I knew about it in passing, that it was a peace camp, but not much else.
Yeah.
And that I feel like I should have learned about this at school. It should be
everyone should learn about this at school, because I see why...
Out of history.
Yeah, I see why governments don't want people knowing about this, though. Because you changed the course of history. You stood up to the government. They were brutal. I mean, Chris was talking about having hot coffee poured on her by cops, who then... actually went down for that because, you know, they humiliated her.
They just got reprimanded.
Oh, really?
She was one of the few women that actually, she was so tenacious. You could see that from
oh, yeah.
I mean, she's still utterly tenacious. But
Bastards they were.
But yes, absolutely. But that kind of thing happened actually far more often than was realised. And it happened to quite a lot of us in different kinds of ways. But what Chris did was she actually took them to court.
Mm.
And that...
But they didn't lose their jobs.
They didn't lose their jobs.
You wonder why you have this culture in the police. You know, if Cressida Dick doesn't fucking go, seriously, with this, you know, I was looking at the stats on how many police officers have been criminal and how many have been, you know, up for, on charges of rape. And it's just, it's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. And you see that tolerated there where they had a woman on the floor humiliating her and pouring hot coffee on her and using homophobic slurs. And it's just so disgusting. And this is something we really do have to fight, because that made me feel very, very angry seeing that against peaceful women who were fighting for, as it turns out, in retrospect, the very right thing. And as I said, there's no peace prize for Thatcher and Heseltine who were standing against you. And that's why the government doesn't want this in schools, because it shows that you were on the right side of history. And that has been explicitly stated by Gorbachev and by the fact that you've won a peace prize. Of course, they don't want you knowing this, but it demonstrates in the future, that's how the school climate strikers will be seen.
Mm-hmm. Women together, we are incredibly powerful. When we know what we want and make it clear that we are not going to stop until the world around us pays attention and changes.
Mm. I could talk to you for like another 5 hours. Susie, before yes. we bring this show to a close, is there anything you wanted to ask or say?
I mean, yeah, there was one question that I did want to ask. I know there were... running over a tiny bit, that was there like a moment when you first realised you were an activist? Was there something in like a childhood or teenage years before you got to Greenham?
Yeah, it was 1973 and I was an exchange student and they sent me to Alaska. And
what a life!
And I found feminism, because I was sent to a high school and we were reading Sylvia Plath, and at the same time we were trying to stop the oil pipeline, and I started writing more and more songs, because I also had to, you know, you're not supposed to, you know, as an exchange student. Anyway, I had to get some money, and I started singing my stuff in cafes, or my feminist, my new feminist songs, and...
And to get money, you were singing. You were basically like cafes. Phoebe from Friends.
But you know, actually, probably about as bad as that.
But your songs had more point and heft.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I came back to do my university thing, and I was meant to be studying physics, but I was going out on street theatre about homelessness and. You know, and feminism, and I became the second ever sort of whatever we called them, sort of person who was convening the women's liberation group at Bristol University at that time. And I suddenly realised, wow, this is so much more fun than physics. So there we go.
I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
I didn't expect it to take a turn to being a folk singer in Alaska either, but there you are. I'm not surprised.
That's the only place Rebecca's going.
I'll be honest, I'm not surprised. Is there anyone with a burning question that we can answer very quickly? But if no one's got anything, the cinema will be delighted. Oh, of course, two people do have something, but I'm also delighted by that. So let's try and answer this one quickly.
I'd really like to know what you wore to the cocktail party.
What did you wear to the cocktail party?
It was rather fabulous, off the
Oh my god!
That I got for some kind of reception at the UN a couple of years before, but it was much better being worn in the rain outside Burfield with my boots, you know, and meeting
with your girls. and what was your question?
Hi, I'm Gio. I'm not sure this can be answered quickly.
Give it a go.
But yeah, I'll just try. I guess it's not the documentary depicted it, the movement as kind of too solid or kind of homogeneous in a way, but there is, we talked earlier about being on the, in retrospect, on the right side of history. I guess as you're doing it, you don't really know. So I guess my question is about kind of the difference of ideas and that, that was managed in the movement. And I imagine over 20 years, there must have been a big debate over everything.
Look, we were a bunch of strong women and we were a bunch of women asking questions. And it used to annoy me when people would say, oh, it must be nice to be at a women's peace camp because, you know, women are so much nicer. It wasn't all sweetness and light.
Yeah.
But it was real. As I said, you know, we were alive and we were arguing everything through, which is why we developed that very much more active, disruptive form of feminist nonviolence, because women came into Greenham and said, no way am I going to lie down passively in front of some men, soldiers, some guys in uniform who are coming at me, because I've had enough violence in my own life, thank you very much, you know, from fathers or uncles or husbands or somewhere in their background. And to be passive would just completely disempower me. So we talked about it and we said, OK, what is going to work? And women would say, well, getting up and dancing, and we'll occupy the fence sometimes, you know, the gates sometimes by dancing, and the police would come. And, you know those teddy bears? Second time women went in, they covered themselves with honey. The soldiers moved in like this and then it was like, ugh. You know, we were constantly being creative.
And funny.
Yeah, and funny. There were amazing women at Greenham. There were amazing women who were part of the whole Greenham women's movement, the Greenham women everywhere, who are still around. They're your neighbours, some of them. You know, they... No, it's not sweetness and light. We have to argue it all through. But again, we try to do it in ways that are non-violence and how we do it. But that does not mean, and here again, we really rejected that notion that as protesters, we should suppress our anger and our fear and, you know, lie down passively and that sort of thing. Because if you're not both angry, furious, and very afraid at what you see them doing to our world with nuclear war, back in the 80s, but remember, actually, we should still be furious and afraid. But climate now on everybody's lips and violence against women, which is really not being dealt with properly. If you're not furious and angry, if you're not afraid, you're not in touch with the emotions that you need to be in touch with. But use them, acknowledge them, recognise them, talk about those feelings of anger and fear, and then channel them into amazing actions to make the change. And don't be afraid to be disruptive. Confronting the violence is different from using violence to confront the people doing it. We do have to confront the people, and we did, and we confronted them with our bodies and our voices. I used to use my Benny Gesserit voice. When you'd see the police kind of dragging somebody away really bad, you'd go, stop that immediately. It's the teacher's voice, actually. You know, it's the teacher's voice. You know, stop that. That's a woman. You need to stop that immediately. Do not harm her. And they would often do that if you use that kind of a voice, because, you know, they're all little boys at heart that remember their teachers or their mothers using that voice, and they know they're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
So that's what we've got to do if we're doing protests from now on, is any time the police come up, find that teacher's voice in you, that mother's voice, or the Benny Gesserit voice, because Dune is now being...
I don't know what the Benny Gesserit voice is, okay, but I can guess.
It has to do with science fiction. It's a woman's voice that has an impact that makes people do what they ought to be doing and not do what they shouldn't be doing.
Well, I need to Google that.
Yeah.
Well, Rebecca, I hope that we can convince you to join our noisy and annoying campaign, because I think you are so, to me, extremely gripping and fascinating. But to Priti Patel, I imagine you are pretty noisy and annoying. as you were to Margaret Thatcher, and
as you were to
Heseltine and Thatcher. I can't thank you enough for coming today and sharing with us in person. If you are listening to this, wherever you are in the world, please seek out Mothers of the Revolution. Get it off iTunes, but start spreading it. Okay, we need to hashtag it. So that's, I think, what we should be collectively trying
to
do.
Send it to six people.
Yes,
do what
absolutely.
Did in the film. Send it to six friends.
Send it to ten.
Okay.
Up the ante, Rebecca. So if everybody here... Well, you didn't have social media then. You were literally phoning people from payphones and typing things.
I think I have the original version of the letter with I typed it on my little...
you've got the original paper. One?
I think so, somewhere...
Because you said you didn't have photocopiers, so you were doing it on, like, stencils
but
and things.
Actually, we did have photocopy shops, so, you know, we did...
But no, luxury.
I think we said 10.
All right. Well, okay. According to the documentary, it was 6. But yeah. Rebecca's now just going, look into my eyes, don't look around my eyes, it was 10. So, but the thing is, with social media, you all can contact more people than that, and with a WhatsApp group. So, yeah, exactly. So don't slack off and do it the way that people did when they had to go to photocopy shops. So if you could all go on your WhatsApp groups and go, I've just seen this amazing documentary, you've got to see it, and then follow up a couple of days, have you seen it yet? Have you downloaded it yet? You need to tell everyone why they need to see it, check in that they've seen it, and get them to tell other people, because that's how we get things going viral now. Now, in those days, they wanted 16,000 people to embrace a base, 16,000 women to embrace a base, and they ended up with 35,000. So we can do better than that. So get cracking on that immediately, whether you're in this room right now, whether you're listening at home. You can't miss this documentary. It is really, really gripping.
It's fantastic.
You see, you don't need any advice because you know all the tools. I'm hopeless on this social media business. You're brilliant.
I mean, I'm not that good, but I know. I mean, I've got a phone. We can all work it out. It's all pretty intuitive. You've done your bit, Rebecca. I really don't think you need to be worried about WhatsApp groups.
You can take a day off Instagram.
Take a day off.
Don't worry.
Take a day off. Get back into your fabulous off-shoulder number and just do the schools. You have been listening to The Guilty Feminist with me, Emma Francis. I know Susie will have lots of questions as well. I think, are we sitting this far apart because of COVID? Is that the idea? I don't know. All right. Well, I don't think COVID would dare, Rebecca.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, I don't think it would dare.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
The Guilty Feminist is provided exclusively from Acast. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.